press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to taste in
the shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Ooh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nominated?
They optioned no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Hey, Dylan, what's up?
Hey, we're giving the people what they want. Another variant of The Life of a Showgirl on vinyl.
Wait, she just, as we're recording, released another one.
I know, that's why I said that.
It's called like the bubbly champagne bath.
Tiny bubbles and champagne, yeah.
Have we talked about The Life of a Showgirl on the pod yet?
Okay, so not directly, but when Marisha was on, she referenced The Life of a Showgirl.
Oh, right, right, right.
So then that became
right.
The title of that episode, but we didn't discuss everything that happened with it. How many weeks ago now was it?
It was, believe it or not, only about two.
Yeah, it was on the 12th, because this is her 12th album.
Of course, of course. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're obviously big Taylor people on this podcast.
I mean, she's my number one.
On Spotify, she's undisputed number one for you and me, I'll probably admit.
No, I just mean, like, of all, not even on Spotify. Like, obviously, there's no other artist where I know all their songs, all their lyrics. I always clarify this by being like obsessed with her music, albums, etc. I truly am not obsessed with her as a person in ways that a stan would be, but I do stan her music in that way, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I suppose I fall into that same camp, but I think there was a time when you and I were obsessed with her life.
You think?
I wouldn't say obsessed, but I definitely think that during like the Red time and the Speak Now time, when a lot of her songs were about different people and she was leaving Easter eggs in the album liner notes, I'd say you and I were more, you know, Detective Fierce back then, trying to sort of decode everything. But I think we literally gave up when 1989 was like the poems, and we just kind of started taking it for what it was.
That's such a good clarification. Wow, to dip back into the archives of one's own mind is a fascinating exercise, but you're so right. I mean, Dylan, we've been doing this podcast for almost 6 years, and we've definitely talked about her ad nauseum. I can remember us talking with Ben Moss about the documentary that she dropped, Miss Americana. I can remember when Folklore and Evermore dropped, doing special episodes for them. So it's well documented. I can't believe we're just now clarifying our love for Taylor, but here we are.
We talked to Aaron Tveit about it. We also talked to Sierra Boggess because Midnights had just come out. And I remember her like raving about Draw a Cat Eye. What is that?
Draw the cat eye sharp enough to kill a man.
She specifically said that lyric was like one of her faves.
That's so funny.
I know.
One of my favorite Taylor related memes is when people post a absolute outfit flop, but with the caption, "Lately, I've been dressing for revenge."
Oh, that's so good.
It's so good. So what do you make of her announcing this album on her football star / GQ cover boy, her boyfriend's podcast that he hosts with his brother, which is like McDowell coded down?
I know. It just goes to show there's a whole other world out there, because I've, of course, heard about this podcast. I don't know what its point is. I don't know what they talk about, but Taylor sure does. I mean, like,
I think football.
I think it's primarily football, because it seemed to me like it became very clear quickly in watching the interview, which I did like a fireside chat during the Great Depression.
Wow.
I ironed clothes and watched the YouTube live, you know, launch of this interview with Taylor, Travis, and Jason.
Wow. Dylan, there is something so nostalgic about on a weeknight tuning in to live television with the rest of the country. I suppose podcasts are television now, because for lack of a better term, they all are, except ours, kind of. Anyway, and doing your housework while the rest of the nation all watches with bated breath. Now, I did not watch. I was listening at 2x speed as I walked in a thunderstorm to the final preview of Mamma Mia on Broadway, but that's neither here nor there. That's neither here nor there. What were your biggest takeaways from the New Heights pod appearance?
Sort of what I was referencing earlier, there is a whole other world out there. She knew all the references about the segment they do called New News. And isn't it so, Taylor, though, to like become fully invested in her man's life and football and everything, like in the same way that she became like a bit of an Anglophile during the era which she dated Joe and maybe even Harry before that.
And Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston. So the first hour, I want to say, maybe a little less, was honestly just a fascinating character study for me because, you know, we love Taylor. We think we know who Taylor is. Obviously, her life's everything has been out there since she was 16. But I also think she's kind of private about like the day to day.
No, totally. Totally. Well, obviously, everything's very curated, but I think this was the smartest thing she could have done in her career at this point. When it was announced at first, I was like, oh my God, this is so cringe. Like, obviously, I don't support, you know, straight men succeeding. So her going on this is making them the biggest podcast like in the history of ever. But I do support family endeavors. I support the Kelce brothers in that way. And I think Taylor's a lover girl. So obviously she's going to be obsessed with her boyfriend and want to be on her boyfriend's podcast. Oh, but the reason I think this is such a good move for her is because Eras tour made her the height of her fame. She's like one of the most famous women in the world. But do we really know that woman? Do we really know this wealthy, obviously, you know, finance driven, but marches to the beat of her own artistic passions as well, kind of artist, whatever she wants to do. You're right. We used to know her when she was putting clues in album liner notes, but she doesn't really do that anymore. And so it was so funny to hear her be like, I'm in sourdough bread Facebook groups and Reddit threads. And she knew all the names of like Jason Kelce's children and like plays games with them at family outings. So it was just very unique, but again, a super smart career move.
I love that you said that. I think you were texting me and Lisa about it in that moment about this is maybe the smartest thing she's ever done. I also think that it's introducing her to maybe people who, because Travis and Jason have a huge following. A lot of it's probably straight men. When your favorite podcast releases a new episode, you usually listen, right? And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if a bunch of people who maybe aren't as up to date on Taylor or who only listen because their girlfriend does, then maybe now are into her or understand her a little bit more. And quite frankly, it was, I mean, the edits were insane because you weren't watching it. You couldn't see the cuts, but
no.
There were some very funny moments and you could totally tell like, oh, maybe they went too far into this moment or too far into that. But
wow.
It was all obviously building up into this release of her 12th album, The Life of a Showgirl. And I'm honestly so excited for multiple reasons, but mostly because it seems like it's in the same vein as 1989.
Totally. I mean, there's also a track featuring Sabrina Carpenter. So I'm in. I love that she's calling the first track The Fate of Ophelia because it feels Tortured Poets vibes in the title. And I love the idea of her transitioning from one era to the next with this like carryover song. She certainly did it, Reputation to Lover, starting with I Forgot That You Existed. It was very like, okay, we're going to be like bitchy Taylor for a second until we move into this Lover era. You know, she's back into Cruel Summer, all this stuff. So I'm hoping it's a little Tortured Poets coded to like really get us into the next.
Yeah, I mean, something that she really focused on in this whole conversation was like, it was during about a very happy time in her life. She wrote it and recorded it all when she was in the European leg of Eras. She was collaborating with Max Martin and Shellback. I think that we can expect it to be bops. I mean, Travis couldn't have hyped it up enough about how it's a total 180 from Tortured Poets. And
yeah, wait, I was dying when you were like, oh my God, Travis not knowing a song because it wasn't performed at the Eras tour is so like doofy boyfriend coded. And it's so true. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh my God. But it's fine. He doesn't need to know every single song by his girlfriend. But
no,
you know.
It's fine. You can tell he loves her. I mean, I guess this podcast is suddenly us analyzing another podcast, which is so funny. But
oh,
I would say that my biggest takeaway from that podcast is that Taylor continues to raise the bar for herself, you know, with releasing two-part albums with over 30 songs, dominating the streaming charts, but maybe not necessarily dominating the Billboard charts in that way. And you can tell she wants to come out with a hit song and she wants to have her version of Espresso, Pink Pony Club, because maybe Antihero was like her last big radio hit.
Okay, totally. But Dylan, that's been almost 3 years.
Yeah, point taken. Blank Space was probably her biggest hit of all time, right?
Yeah.
And so she hasn't had a lot of people's critique with the last album was that it all sounded the same and it all sort of blended together. And I'll certainly admit that TTPD was a grower for me. I remember when I first heard it, I was like, ugh. And now, of course, I'm still listening to it all this time
Well, same,
later.
because the girls who got it. And I just have to say that I'm glad she's switching to working with other people on this one for sure. Or I should say, working with people again. Now, some of the titles do give me great pause, Dylan. I have to
Yeah,
say, I'm
tell me some,
worried.
give me some of the titles.
Well, okay. There's a track called Elizabeth Taylor, which I do enjoy when Taylor taps into old Hollywood fame, glamour, maybe a woman who had many lovers.
Many
So,
gay
you know,
lovers.
many gay, well, that too. Taylor doesn't hang out with the gays. That's clear with how she dresses and how
I think she
she.
hung out with Todrick during the
Oh,
Lover era
enough
and
said. Enough said. The Fab Five was like twiddling about during 1989, too, weren't they?
and apparently she paid all of the drag queens in the You Need to Calm Down video very handsomely.
I love that. That's great. But okay, so the title Wood, WOOD. Now,
Wow.
is it about Travis's cock?
I mean, are we making bold predictions about the vibe of these songs or maybe the concept behind these songs?
Both, whatever. I mean, Wood is definitely about like sturdiness, like this sturdy lover, right? Like this man-made, you know, not that wood is, but you use wood to make man-made strong structures. And he's like this hard lover in her life, right? Like it's definitely gonna be about him.
I think we can assume the majority of the songs are going to be about him. I wouldn't be surprised though if wood was a double entendre. It could mean WOUD, you know, in a Sondheimian way. Moments in the woods.
Is this her moments in the woods moment?
It might be. It might be.
Wow. Oh my God. Now, canceled exclamation point gives me, I mean, the most pregnant pause to ever have existed. It's going to either be the most cringe song ever that I'm going to be proven wrong by after 3 months and say, oh my God, she was so right. She was so right. But what is canceled about, Dylan? What is this about?
I just hope it's one of those songs where she never says the title of it in the song.
Okay. Yeah. Oh God, can you imagine?
Remember the vault track Slut that was on 1989?
Yeah, we talked about it on a Twin Talk, and somebody in my life said to me that they were shocked that we thought that song should be called Drunken Love. And I think about it every time I hear the song Slut. I'm like, well, yeah, I agree, like years later now, that that song should not be called Drunken Love, but it certainly shouldn't be called Slut.
No, that's so funny. I want to know who said that
Oh,
later,
just like
but
somebody I used to work with, but again, a Swiftie, a Swiftie, actually. Okay, so Wood and Canceled, those are tricky titles for me. But Ruin the Friendship is interesting because I have a feeling it's not going to be about romantic friendship. I have a feeling it's going to be a professional friendship.
Well, a lot of people are predicting there's some acknowledgement of the Olivia Rodrigo drama. So here we are again, pretending like we don't care about Taylor's personal life, and now we're telling on ourselves completely.
But I'll tell on myself here now again. What is the drama there? That Olivia used some of Taylor's, sampled some of her music?
And Taylor got real litigious multiple times with Olivia, and Olivia felt really burned by it. That's the extent of it that I know. Anyone who's listening probably knows more than me.
Oh, because Vampire by Olivia is apparently about Taylor, right? Or fans think. Okay, here's the thing about Taylor. She's built this brand on own your shit, own your music. What you make is yours. I need everything that's mine to be mine, and you shouldn't let anyone take that away from you. So if she had just like kind of let Olivia slide, it would have gone against her brand. I'm not defending Taylor. She should have just let Olivia go with that. But it's part of her like shtick that you should be paid for what you're worth, which also I do agree with, by the way. I do agree with that. Anyway.
It makes me sad because Olivia apparently idolized Taylor. I mean, obviously she did. She borrowed a lot of her motifs, but also Taylor gave her like a ring or a necklace or something that she wore and during like the Red era. And it was like this, like sort of this
Wow.
bequeathing moment and this anointing moment as a Tay daughter, as they say. You know,
Can't.
I don't care enough to really get into the weeds of it anymore.
I love how we both know like small details that are
I
leading us into
know.
this. But anyway, I have to say, I'm stoked for the song, the title track, The Life of a Showgirl, featuring Sabrina Carpenter, which I think is going to be amazing. I mean, Sabrina really is that girl. She is that girl. I mean, at the time of this release, we're 2 days away from Sabrina's next album, Man's Best Friend, which I think is going to be great. Dylan, I'm still bumping Short and Sweet often.
It's so
There's
amazing.
this bonus track from the extended version called Bad Reviews. It's the final song of the Short and Sweet extended. Dylan, I cannot stop listening to it. It's like 2.5 minutes long, and I wish it was 200 years long.
I think you played it for me before, but I don't think I got into the bonus tracks too much.
You have to. Why don't you listen to pop music that much? Like,
because I listen to theater all the time.
You need to hear Bad Reviews. Her vocals are stunning on it. It's a helpless plea about choosing the wrong guy yet again. And everybody's telling you he's the wrong one. You know he's the wrong one, but you're looking past it because you really want love to work this time.
That's kind of powerful.
It's good. It's very like young girl vibes. That's what I love about Sabrina. She's like writing about the experiences of being a young gal, which obviously I relate to in many ways. So,
Do we think a lot of, I guess we're transitioning from Taylor to Sabrina now.
Yeah, it's time. It's time.
Do we think that a lot of it's going, I don't know if this is how Sabrina writes. I know that her last album, there was some Shawn Mendes type songs.
Right.
References to that. But do you think that a lot of Man's Best Friend is going to be about Barry Keoghan?
I do. I do think so, for sure. But I think it's also going to be obviously a critique about womanhood and girlhood and in the limelight, probably similar to The Life of a Showgirl, actually. It'll be interesting to look at what they're both trying to say about, you know, women in the spotlight.
Well, I know that Jade from Little Mix is also releasing her album in September, and I think it's called And That's Showbiz.
Oh, yeah, it is. I'm excited about that.
And then Perry is releasing her album at the end of September too. So
it's like 2 weeks apart.
You know, I love that Taylor's waiting till Q4 for many reasons, but I love that we're once again getting sort of a windfall of pop girlies after a summer of the question of what is the song of the summer still remains unclear to me. But I do know what you would say.
Oh?
Manchild.
I love Manchild, Dylan. Okay, so I was addicted to Lorde's Virgin album for all of June and all of July. For some reason, I fell off. Like, it just kind of burnt for me for some reason, as well as the Haim album.
I only listened to that when I was in your presence, which was admittedly a lot throughout the summer.
I'm still tuning in, but I don't know.
Was that the relationship song?
It is. Yeah.
I do like that a lot.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. Still love the Lorde album. Still love the Haim album. I'm still listening to Maren Morris's Dreamsicle.
Did that come out this year?
It did.
Okay.
So good. Honestly, I've been bumping some Jason Schmidt lately. Friend of the pod, Jason Schmidt.
I love to hear that. Well, you know, what listeners need to know is I did receive a frantic text maybe.
Yeah.
A week or two ago. And you were like, give me Jason Schmidt songs I need to listen to. Because obviously I do listen to pop music when it's related to theater.
Right.
Or Friends of the Pod. And I was like, just listen to all the singles. And it turns out he's been sort of collecting them for an EP with each release of a new song, which is great. And so I'm thrilled to hear that you love his music as much as I do.
I do. I love it. Well, I guess the reason I said it was because I felt like we were in a bit of a music drought for a few weeks there. And I like Addison Rae. I am not into her like in the way that all the other gays in New York are, but I appreciate some of her songs.
That must be a regional thing because I don't have any friends here in Columbus that listen to Addison Rae.
Yeah, not surprised to hear that. Not surprised to hear that at all. Well, anyway, Dylan, okay, so we did a lot of like music chatter here, but so much has happened in the theater world in the last few weeks.
A crazy amount. And, you know, we try to keep up with it week to week on the podcast, like mentioning if something was announced or what's going on. But I think we need to break down a lot of the news because a new theater season means a new crop of potential drama guests.
Dylan, trust me, I'm clocking these announcements and these cast releases being like, oh, June Squibb on drama.
which I don't think is as crazy as it may seem. And I'm putting it out there. I've already tweeted about it. I want June Squibb on drama. And I think she would love us.
Yeah.
This is my official plea to Second Stage, who I know we have an amazing working relationship with.
Shout out to Richard Ponce.
Yeah, shout out to house manager Richard Ponce, who we used to usher for back in the day. But also, we are multi-generational here on drama. We have the young girlies, but we also have the distinguished grand dames of the theater on this podcast. Okay, we don't discriminate. We're not just for the legends. We're not just for the rising stars. June Squibb, come and meet the people where they're at on drama.
That's right. Listen, I'm telling you.
But if June isn't available, Cynthia Nixon. We will also happily,
we need Aunt Ada on the pod.
We need Miranda on the pod.
Well, I don't know that I'd want to talk about it just like that with Cynthia Nixon, but.
Well, as Logan would call it, Old Testament Sex and the City, Old Testament Miranda. We could talk about some of that. Those
would be
great
more
hits.
than happy to. But no, okay, so what is this play that June and Cynthia are in? I heard it's AI vibes, which I'm famously anti.
I did not know it was AI vibes. I just heard it's a little bit heavier. And I think it has to do with memory and grief. And June Squibb is, of course, 95. So
I was just going to say, this could be the last chance. She wants to do a Broadway show at her big age. So
I can't believe she wants to do it. I know her Waitress run, which is so ironic. I tweeted about it recently after I saw a local production of Waitress. And I was remembering how she was creatively cast as old Josie in Waitress.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was only like a 6 week run, maybe even less.
That sounds nice.
And so obviously, you know, Second Stage has shorter runs too. So it's at the Hayes. I believe it's in the Cult of Love slot this year.
I see. Well, I mean, Purpose rented out the Hayes and stayed through the summer. So maybe Marjorie Prime will be a big hit and stay through the summer too.
It depends. I don't know if they have something else lined up for after it.
I don't know either. As you know, on a theater podcast, we should know this stuff. But you know us, you guys, any of the wind blows. Okay, so Marjorie Prime has been announced. We've also got Carrie Coon returning to Broadway. Again, another Gilded Age legend here, but also Leftovers. Also, The White Lotus. Come on. She can do anything.
And Ohio legend, too.
Can't wait. That's going to be so good.
And it's in a play written by her husband, Tracy Letts.
Yeah. Right? Oh my God, it's going to be so good.
I'm excited about that. It's her only her second Broadway credit. The last time she was on Broadway was in like 2012 or 13 in Virginia Woolf.
Who's Afraid, Mama? Which Virginia Woolf would this have been?
It was, I believe, a Steppenwolf.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know what? I've never seen Virginia Woolf on stage. Just the movie, obviously, which is incredible. Speaking of Elizabeth Taylor, one of the best actress Oscar wins ever in my book would be Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So it was with Tracy Letts. He was in the George and Martha couple with Amy Morton, who you and I, of course, will remember from Walking Dead, but she was also in one of our faves. Do you know what I'm going to say?
No, but I'm laughing.
She said.
Oh, my God. The film, she said.
The film, she said, with friend of the pod, Zoe Kazan.
Okay, wait. I was thinking about She Said recently and how Winona Judd was in it.
Yeah.
Face brushed to the gods. And we don't talk about that enough. We don't talk about the filter that was on her. We also don't talk about the filter that was on Sarah Michelle Gellar in a recent film she was in. And I won't say the name of it because I don't want to spoil anything, but it was crazy. That was insane.
It was a choice for sure.
What's weird about those crazy filters, like they put on Drag Race too, obviously, with the judges.
Rue, they say Rue has like a floating wig in some of the scenes.
We know what y'all really look like. So why are you doing this? Dude, technology is helpful in many ways. I mean, for example, my Zoom filter's on right now. But in other ways,
I'd say it's just a kiss of a filter though. I mean, I know this is an audio format, but it's not like over the top, like blurred, like Coco Montrese Instagram.
Thank you. I appreciate photo. That. I appreciate that. But I'm telling you, technology's scaring me lately, Dylan. Is this my dose of drama? Like, I really am so spooked.
I know. It's definitely something that we're going to continue to see. Like, I think that McNeil play last year was about AI. That was one that we missed. But it's only continued to be more part of the conversation. Focusing back on the Broadway of it though. So we got June Squibb, we got Cynthia Nixon, we got Carrie Coon. Sherry Renee Scott is also returning to Broadway for the first time in, like, I believe a decade plus.
Whoa, I didn't realize it's been that long.
Yeah, the last time she was on Broadway was in Women on the Verge.
Okay.
And now, yeah, so actually it's probably 15 years.
Oh, and she was allegedly mistreated by one of her castmates in that.
There was a lot of backstage drama.
Not to put shade on anyone's names, but a famous diva was allegedly very rude to Sherry Renee Scott in that show.
Wow. Allegedly, of course.
Allegedly. We don't know. We don't know these women. Yeah. Sherry Renee Scott was supposed to be on our podcast this past winter when she was in Little Shop. But
yes,
scheduling and timing and...
Listen, it's going to happen this time.
It has to. She's such an icon. Also, again, we talk about this on the podcast all the time, but having these incredible Broadway vets, these stars, taking on standby roles, taking on alternate roles, taking on replacements, it's just the gift that keeps on giving. We get to see all of our faves, hypothetically, in these shows. So I'm just stoked that she's doing this. And I can't wait for the backstage content of Kristen and Sherry. Like, it's going to be so good.
It had me thinking, have the two of them ever shared a role before or played the same role? Because typically you see Kristen in more golden agey stuff, if not the few roles that she originated in original musicals on Broadway. But Sherry's maybe a little bit been a little bit more contemporary in more recent years.
Good
I mean, I would imagine
question.
Kristen did Audrey at some point in some little shop.
That's a good point. She had to have. Well, because I'm thinking about it, Adina obviously replaced Sherry in Aida. So you would think that Sherry might do more, you know, mezzo-soprano belty kind of stuff. I'm talking like I know music here. I'm really trying my best.
Well, we're also talking like we know what the Stephen Schwartz score has in store for us. Because I haven't heard any of the music from Queen of Versailles. And I mean, I would imagine the score is written to Kristen's to show her soprano prowess, which I mean, I know she hits optional high notes in a lot of the shows that she does on Broadway and on tour.
She does. Actually, I know someone who saw Queen of Versailles and they said that there was musical stylings curated to Kristen's talents in that way. So
yeah, you go to see Kristen Chenoweth and you want to hear her share one of her greatest gifts.
So Sherry's the standby, not like a Tuesday night.
Well, I saw one of the social media posts from QOV Musical, which is their handle.
Period.
That there will be scheduled performance dates.
Nice.
So I think that it might be that. Maybe post-opening.
Probably. Yeah.
In the way that they eventually did with Gypsy, with Audra.
And I suppose with Sunset.
I know that Bette did Hello Dolly for a long time, all eight. And then Donna was shuffled in after the Tonys.
Can you believe we were so lucky to have Donna Murphy in that production of Hello Dolly having a weekly residency?
It's so incredible.
And we saw her, Dylan.
Our first experience.
Oh my God. That revival. I mean, the Scott Rudin aside, stunning. Stunning work.
Yeah. So, so incredible.
Tate, Gavin, Taylor, Beanie.
David Hyde Pierce. And then eventually Victor Garber.
Wow. Right.
Bernadette.
Bernadette did all eight.
Wait, anyway. Speaking of Scott Rudin, you know, you're not going to hear us mention much about it, but Laurie Metcalf is coming to Broadway this fall as well in Little Blue Bear Ridge, this play that Scott Rudin is not even quietly making his Broadway return in producing. I'm all for the notion that people can change, but I just don't think we've seen that change. And there hasn't been any public statements from Rudin.
It's filthy and it's disgusting.
Sad that Laurie is licking the boots of Scott Rudin here.
I'm saying that, Laurie, your behavior is filthy and disgusting. You should not be working with Scott Rudin. Come on. We love you. This is not right. But it's just a reminder that celebrities really live in their own world on their own planes and make their own excuses for their friendships and their connections and their businesses. So you got to give a shout out to the people in the industry that aren't afraid to speak up.
Oh, totally.
You know, like an Ally Trim. Ally Trim in Wicked. She is so unafraid to speak out on issues that are important to her, whether it be about union rules, whether it be about, I don't know, wars raging on in the world. And that's not an easy thing to do because producers are very, I'm not saying her producer, I'm saying producers in general are very powerful and very petty. And they could disagree with you on an issue or want to throw you out or silence you and stuff. So I really do give so much credit to people who are unafraid to speak out and speak up for the things that matter to them. And sure, there's the things we all agree on that we can speak up about and speak out on, but it's the hard stuff that's really tough. So shout out to Ally Trim and shout out to, not shout out to Laurie Metcalf. So I'll be skipping that.
I agree with you on all of that. It also kind of makes me think about, which we haven't had a Twin Talk come out in this news cycle about the maybe happy ending casting controversy. I think that we touched upon it on a Patreon episode, but people have been very vocal in speaking out about the way that they feel about that.
Yes. In more Broadway casting news, Darren Criss is leaving and then going back to maybe happy ending. Jasmine Amy Rogers is going to be in Spelling Bee.
So exciting. I love that fresh off of her Tony nomination, this like kind of Broadway moment that she really had. She's stepping into Spelling Bee, which is looking like it's going to be another one of these little shops where they have gaggy cast members coming in and out.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Well, with Jasmine, friend of the pod, she probably had an offer from many shows. So it's a boon for Spelling Bee to get her on there because, like, I'm telling you, I'm sure Chicago called. Wicked should be calling.
Oh, yeah. The phones were probably ringing off the hook. Let's put it that way.
And that's at New World Stages, right?
I believe so. A lot of cool stuff going on over there again.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I saw Heather's.
You saw Heather's and made an appearance in Emma Pittman's vlog.
Oh my God, that was so crazy. Well, when we were talking about going together, she was like, okay, wait, but you're going to have to be in my vlog if you have, if you consent to it. And I was like, oh my God, yeah.
Did you sign a waiver?
No, but I did watch myself in it, which was such a mistake. I was chewing gum in like two of my speaking appearances in it, and my face looked crazy. So I,
Rookie mistake.
rookie miss, I really wasn't thinking, Dylan. There's like a little globule of gum in my cheek during it. Oh my God, it's so embarrassing. But anyway, had the best time with Emma. And Heather's is that girl. Heather's is that girl. It's so funny. The music is insane. Like, it's bop after bop. I get why they cut You Make My Balls So Blue, but damn if that wasn't an earworm.
Oh my God, I know.
It gets stuck in your head. But okay, so this Heather's revival is perfectly cast. Lorna Courtney is giving the performance. Like, that's mother.
Her Veronica Sawyer, is it have any notes of Winona?
I would say no, I would say notes of Winona, but none of Barrett Wilbert Weed. It's very like a different take on the character, for sure.
Well, yeah, and like the famous slime tutorials of Heather's, Barrett plays it in a very droll sort of way, right?
Which is, I would say, more leaning towards Winona. But Lorna's portrayal of the role is, at least in my take on it, she gets way in over her head really fast, and the whole time she's really trying to backtrack. She can't quite seem to get out of it. So it hurts more in the end, and you're more connected with the character and everything that happens. But damn, I forgot how dark the show is. I mean,
Yeah. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, that show, death and suicide, and the key is in the direction. It needs to be, you need to kind of realize it's campy.
yeah, it was so good though. Dylan Mackenzie Kurtz is so funny and smart, and like her comedic timing is insane.
And how is our boy Casey
Oh
Likes?
my God, I told her, okay, it's his best performance ever.
Really?
It's so good to see him be so bad. Oh, it's so good. His voice sounds so incredible. And that JD Veronica dynamic is fantastic. Him and Lorna together singing 17. Oh my God, I just got a chill thinking about it. I think Heather's is that girl. This is that off-Broadway show of the summer, fall, et cetera, that like people are going to go back to again and again and again. It's so good.
I guess it's like really, really well sold. Like, I don't know if it's like sold out, but through January. So good for them. I
There
know
you
the show
go.
hasn't always had like successful runs, but its life that it's taken on online, I think, has really contributed in a big way to it.
Yeah. And I think it's gonna also hopefully has a healthy run, and we get to see amazing performers come in and out. I want to give a shout out to Elizabeth Teeter, who I'm not familiar with really in any way. The Beetlejuice craze really passed us by, didn't it, Dylan? Like, we liked it, but we never were like addicted in the way that everyone else was. She's so good.
Which Heather is she? You don't need to know last name, but maybe song.
She's yellow outfit Heather.
Is that the tiniest lifeboat?
It's Tiniest Lifeboat. She's great. And the gal who plays Martha, Erin, is unbelievable. She like campaigned for the role because she's TikTok famous.
Yes, I've seen videos.
I literally was like, okay, they need to write three more new songs that are just for her to sing because her voice is crazy. She's not really in the show that much.
Just Kindergarten Boyfriends. Yeah, I like know all the song
Yeah.
titles.
No, you know it better than you think. But anyway.
Oh, and then also the revival of Proof was announced, starring Iowa Debris and Don Cheadle. Hunter said that's like the most analyzed play in college acting classes. And so everyone has done a monologue or a scene from Proof at some point. A lot of people are probably very excited to finally see Proof.
Well, there is the Gwyneth Paltrow film version as well.
I don't know what it's about, but I'm excited about it.
It's Iowa Debris' Broadway debut, you said?
I didn't say that, but I believe it is.
Oh, I could have swore you said that.
She's had such a meteoric rise, like movie star, TV star, now Broadway star. And then, of course, Ragtime announced their full cast, which it's primarily the New York City Center cast, plus friend of the pod, Jason Forbach, and a few others.
Wait, Stephanie Styles isn't in it. Did you notice that?
Oh, I did not notice that. Is I think she's more LA based.
Okay. Yeah. I'm bummed she's not in it because she was such a standout at the City Center presentation of it. So,
That's right, because you saw it, but this is before you work at City Center.
isn't that so weird?
It's so weird to think about.
I know.
So many fun Broadway things coming up, but I'm just killing me that I'm not going to be able to be in the city until maybe like November, December.
That late in the fall? Damn.
And then I mentioned a few weeks ago that Two Strangers announced for Broadway. Very excited about it. Not thrilled it's going into the Long Acre. It should be in the booth, in my opinion.
But Laurie Metcalf's in the booth.
But Laurie Metcalf, yep, she needed to go back to where she did Virginia Woolf for a week before COVID.
Oh, shoot. That's right. That was with Rupert Everett from My Best Friend's Wedding.
Really?
And Russell Tovey.
I remember that. And I also remember our friend Nick Rurkraut went with Nina West to see that show.
What is such a funny detail.
I remember this is before we befriended Nina. And so it was like, I was like, oh my God, you're going to a Broadway show with Nina? Anyways.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Yeah, I know. There's a lot happening. What do you think is like the front runner for best musical this year? I'm putting you totally on the spot because I have no answer.
I don't think I would have said that maybe Happy Ending was a front runner last year when the season was announced. And so I really think it is just too early to call. The only two original musicals that are announced to be opening this fall are Queen of Versailles and Two Strangers Carry a Cake Across New York.
Wow.
Everything else is a revival and whatnot. So I know the spring, Lost Boys is coming into the Palace. And
Wanted.
And Wanted is going to be coming to Broadway. So as of right now, too soon to call is what I'm going to say. I know this episode has been drama filled, but we have to try and end with some type of dose of drama.
I know. There's like four things on my mind that I could share as a dose. But I suppose at the time of recording, Lady Gaga is performing the Mayhem Ball in New York City. She's doing a bit of a residency over the next few weeks. She did her first weekend. She's doing some weeknights and then she's doing some post-Labor Day shows. It's killing me that I will not be there, but I could not get a decently priced ticket when it went on sale, and the resale prices are absolutely bonkers. Like the cheapest that I saw over the weekend was $400, and it was for a seat that was kind of like behind the stage. We need to abolish big ticket, y'all. Must abolish.
I know. I'm holding out hope that she ends up doing a big tour next summer of it, especially if it's a huge Grammys contender. This is like what Beyonce did. She released Cowboy Carter last year and then it didn't tour until the following year.
And if anyone listening to this has a spare ticket in their group, maybe someone's can't make it anymore, they can't make it to town and you want to invite me, please, I want to go. You know where to find me.
And listen, ticket please like that have worked before on this podcast. So I'm not going to put it out of the realm of possibility.
Okay, so Dylan, do you have a dose of drama or truly like anything that you have consumed lately that you just have to talk about as we end this episode?
Yes. Emmys are coming up. So I'm catching up on all the Emmys fare. And this is something you and I have not talked about like at all, but loved The Studio.
Loved.
On Apple TV Plus. And then I did watch all four episodes of Adolescence in a 12-hour period. It was one of the most devastating, incredible, well-crafted, limited series I have ever seen.
Oh my God.
The majority of it takes place is like, it's meant to seem like a one shot, but just so ironic because like The Studio, a lot of that was done in oneers. It's becoming quite a thing. It's not for the faint of heart. It's about childhood violence and trauma and how it affects not only the victim, but also the perpetrator and the families of both and the communities that they're both in. I mean, it is so good. And this 13-year-old boy, well, at least his character is 13. I don't know if he is. Was absolutely brilliant as Jamie. They're all Northern.
Everyone's talking about Jamie.
But literally, that's the alternate title, I think, for Adolescence, because the boy's name is Jamie. And Stephen Graham, who stars as Jamie's dad and also was like a co-showrunner, writer, everything, also turned it out in one of those brilliant performances. The woman who plays the mother was also Emmy nominated, and the woman who plays the child psychologist in the third episode was also Emmy nominated. So it is so good. Each episode is totally different and they're all in true Warner fashion. They take place in real time.
Wow.
Similar to The Pit.
Dylan, you're convincing me to watch Adolescence now.
I have to say though, when it ended, when the final episode ended, I literally had to sit and exhale, let out a few muffled, choked sobs, turn off the television, and get up.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It is really beautiful. And there's a bit of I would say it's a timeless story because the themes are timeless, but they do sneak in an element of the manosphere and how children may not always listen, but they do learn, and the learned behaviors of modern technology being scary, something you've mentioned a few times today, is woven in. And so it's definitely a heavier watch, but it felt like a play at times.
Oh my God. Okay. Should I watch? You know me.
Let me think about
that. You think about it and let me know. And then the last thing I just want to leave the listeners with is, y'all, I pled for Dylan that we do a twin talk this week. We have episodes in the can. We have episodes coming. But I was like, there's so much to talk about. And I'm so glad we did because we covered so much. I mean, we spent 20 minutes on Taylor, but you know, that's classic. I wanted to do a dedicated segment to the pit today.
Oh my God. Yes.
So to be continued, we will talk all about The Pit, which is a medical TV show, y'all, because it has owned both of our lives for the last week. And I recommend it. And we will break it down more. But anyway, Dylan, this was so much fun. I'm so glad we did one of these.
If people want to hear more of these kinds of conversations, they obviously need to check out our Patreon, where you and I talk like this, maybe even more cavalierly, about all things theater, pop culture, love, and life. And it's Drama Plus. The links are below. You know where it is. It's $5 a month and you get 2 bonus episodes a month. And, you know, as a little treat, Connor and I are celebrating our birthday this weekend. What could be a better gift than some new Patreon subscribers?
We would love that so much. We've already done a few episodes in August, so that would be the best gift ever. We love y'all. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, producer Dylan.
And y'all, stay tuned for next week because we have an icon coming to the pod who, much like many of the guests we featured throughout this summer, are crossover talents of television and stage.
Period. Wow. I have chills. And last thing I'll say, we keep like this Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, like there's so many endings.
Literally.
We listed a lot of shows coming to the theater scene in New York this fall. Tell us who you want to hear from these plays and musicals because
yeah,
we stay booking. Okay, y'all. And if you're not already following us, we are at The Drama Podcast on X, on Instagram. We're at The Drama Pod on TikTok. And I'm at Connor McDowell and Dylan's at Dylan McDowell.
That's right. And Connor, I will see you next time when we're another year older.
Drama!